But tonight, we're looking at wellness in the workplace, wellness in the workplace. So, Boff has very kindly agreed to be interviewed in just a little while, so we're going to hear from him a little later on. It's worth saying, we're on week five of this series, that all of these different things that we're talking about are meant to come together into one thing of living well. That's kind of the point of the series. None of these are really done in isolation from one another. So as we're thinking about the workplace tonight, that of course has impact upon our mental health, our physical health. It has impact upon our, next week we're going to be looking at finances and materialism, all sorts of things that come together to this big picture we've got of living well and living God's ways. And particularly for this one, there are all sorts of different aspects that come into this one thing of working for God, working well, and doing the things that we can to serve one another and serve him well. Now, I don't know if you've ever felt this way before in the workplace. Have you ever felt this way? What do you mean you need to find a balance between work and family? We consider you part of our family. Ever felt like that in your workplace? Can be a stressful place, of course. I guess things have been kind of stressful at the office. Tomorrow is bring your therapist to work day. Maybe so. And then maybe where you have had, you know, you realize that there are some things wrong. You're not feeling quite so good. I'm disappointed. If anyone should have seen the red flags, it's you. But just to get us going tonight, we're going to think a little bit about some of the statistics behind the workplace. Because when you look at the statistics, it is really quite significant what is going on. In 2017 to 2018, there were 1.4 million people suffering from work-related illness. I know this series is meant to be about more the positive ways of about living well, but the stats are quite negative. 1.4 million people suffering from work-related illness over the course of a year. 26.8 million working days lost in 2017 to 2018. I mean, think about that. That's a lot of hours, a lot of time with people being off work for all kinds of reasons, and whether it be a more long-term illness, short-term illness. But significantly, 15.4 million of those days were due to stress, anxiety, or depression. Think of that stat. That's well over half of the days were something to do with stress, anxiety, or depression, the people taking time off work. And if you look at the stats over a period of time, so SAD, stress, anxiety, or depression, it spells out the word SAD, stress, anxiety, and depression, make up about 44% of total sickness days, up from 32% in 2001 to 2002. So huge, great percentage that factors into this whole thing we're talking about. Can anyone guess what are the top five most stressful sectors to work in? Does anyone have any idea, statistically speaking? Farmers. Highest suicide rate, yeah. And actually, I think they're highest on the injury rate as well, or that sector anyway, but that's probably quite obvious, yeah. Vets are not on there, no. No, they're not. No. Yeah. Teaching is on the list. Yeah, teaching is in the top five. Yes. Health service. Yes, that's right. That's right. Welfare. And actually, nursing and midwifery is one of the top ones. Anything else? Any other ideas? Yeah.
Politicians
is not. No, politicians is not one of the top five stressful jobs. No. You've got most of them. Here are the top five by the numbers anyway. Nursing and midwifery, teaching, welfare, legal and professional is up there, which I suppose is understandable, and business support. Not quite sure business support, but apparently business support is one of the top five most stressful sectors that you can be involved with. If you want to find out where you are on the list, by the way, here's the various different aspect. This is overall sickness. This is not one particular area, but apart from the right where it's workplace injury, which, of course, agriculture, forestry, and fishing is highest on the list of injury. But all kinds of different sectors there. Human health and social work is quite high up there. Public admin, defense, utility supply, all sorts of things. And this is putting together a few different statistics, I think, the biggest picture. But yeah, where are you on the list? Where's yours on the list? You could try and work it out where you belong on the list. And if you look at the trends, Some of you are laughing because you found yourself. If you look at the trends, broadly speaking, our health is getting better in the workplace, broadly speaking, okay? If you look at that over the last 20 years or so, there's been a general downward trend in the amount of ill health, broadly flat in recent years. It's kind of leveled off a bit. But interestingly, what area has increased? Well, it is this whole area of stress and anxiety. So if you look at the stats there, it kind of dips up and down a little bit. But in the last few years, it has been steadily on the rise upwards. I should say that this is self-reported anxiety and depression and issues relating to that. So this is people who have come forward and said this is the case. This might be something to do with the fact that there is a greater emphasis on this in today's world. It's really been a big ramp up in this area of mental health and particularly relating to the workplace. So that might have something to do with the statistics, but obviously that kind of thing is on the rise and has been steadily so for the last few years. Difference between men and women as well. Difference between men and women, and it's got age categories there as well. And again, this is self-reported. This is self-reported. And so you've got women tend to self-report more illness, or particularly in the areas of stress, than men do. And that is possibly because women are actually better at talking about this kind of thing and being more open about the way things are going, the way things are. Men tend to bottle things up and don't say things so much. That could have something to do with the way that the figures are set up there. I don't know if you can find yourself on the list there somewhere. Probably somewhere in there. But anyway, interesting to see all these comparisons, these different ways in which the stats are telling us that workplace, and we probably all know this, can be a stressful place to be, it can be a difficult environment to be a part of, and yet we are all part of it in our own different ways, and whether that's being at school right the way through to nearing retirement and perhaps even beyond, we all know the stresses that can come along with work. We're going to think a little bit tonight about what the Bible says about work itself. And the first point to make is that in the beginning, God created us to work. He created us to work. I'm afraid you cannot escape from that. God created us to work. Genesis 2, chapter 15, said that the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. There are some people who go around saying things like, work must have been a product of the fall because it's so awful. But I'm afraid it's not. I'm afraid it's not. God put man in the garden and said, get to work. I want you to work. You are to be a working people, to work the ground and to take care of the world around us. It was always God's intention that we should work. Now, of course, the fall had an impact upon that. We read in Genesis 3 that the ground became harder after the fall and things got more difficult. And, of course, we fell as people and all the kind of issues to do with health and everything else came into our own lives at that particular point. But God created us to work in the first place. He created us to be a working people. And it's even more than that, because in Genesis 1, even before Genesis 2, so Genesis 1, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over every fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. There was this mandate that we should be both the carers of creation and also to subdue it. To, in what we do, show something of the glory of God, something of his work in this world, that we should be the people who look after creation, work to till it, to look after it, care for it, and bring glory to God in the things that we do as people. So that was right from the very start, and the mandate hasn't changed. This thing of turning chaos into order, turning this natural world that we live in and are part of into a place where we can all work, belong, and flourish. And in fact, that we can see progress as well. Little cartoon here. We've had a run of pretty bad luck lately, Eve, but I have a pretty good feeling about this work thing. Is work the thing that we just kind of throw in there and chuck in there at the end of it? Well, of course it's not. It's what we were created to do. I like what one seminary professor said about work and human flourishing, that we are created to work and for human beings to flourish. He said this, God expected Adam and Eve to split the atom. I quite like that when I came across that. That there is something about the way we are as people that God created us, not just to work, but also to see progress and to flourish in the things that we do. To see development in not only our own lives, but in our society, in our cultures, in the bringing together of people into community, to be a people together, to work and to grow and to and to see human life develop and grow. There is this thing that we call common grace, that we see God at work in the world, that by his grace he has not just given us life that we can live and do all the stuff that we do and work, but he's put a real goodness and a sense of purpose about this world that we live in. We see that in the creation story, actually, that as you go through the creation story, God is a God of purpose. He instills purpose not just in creation, but in our own lives as well, and in the lives of all people together as his community, that we work together to be this people who bring glory to him by doing what we do. And all sorts of other things as well. This common grace extends to him holding back sin in this world, that he somehow holds back sin in our society, that he gives our leaders a sense of what we should be doing. There is an influence on society that he brings to bear in such a way that we can't always detect, that we can't always see in the world around us, but God is working his purpose out among us through his common grace. And his plan isn't thwarted by anything that we do. Sometimes we can feel that our workplace can seem a bit futile. Sometimes we feel like we are not really doing much. Sometimes we can feel like that when we mess up, somehow we get in the way of what God is doing, like we're in the way of his purposes. I like this little quote that I came across. It appeared on social media a little while ago. If you think you've blown God's plan for your life, rest in this. You, my beautiful friend, are not that powerful. Because God is at work. He works and he gives us real purpose and direction for our lives, and his plans aren't thwarted by anything that we do. And amazingly, we see the result, don't we? We see the result of what God has been doing through the work of people right the way down through the ages. We can look at our cities, as on the screen there. That's New York. Look at our cities and say, Where have human beings flourished to? What's the point we've reached? We've reached the point where we can build incredible cities for God, cities to live in, cities to glorify God by the very fact that they are just made and we are part of his creation, have done so. It's all part of this subduing of creation. You know, when we see technological advancements, the people who work in areas of science, and we see the way in which the technology has advanced, that is something of the glory of God in this world. That he gives us our brains and the ability to work stuff out and work together to see progress. You look at industry, you look at hospitals and those who are researching into how to cure diseases and the amount of diseases we can cure today. Vastly improved on years gone by. All because God has given us the ability to think things through, to discover this world that he has made and to put it to good use, to work, to be the people that he has called us to be. You know, it's interesting, actually. You get to the very end of the Bible, and what do we see at the very end of the book of Revelation? Is we see that the new Jerusalem, this city coming down from heaven. It's interesting that right at the end of the Bible, we see this pinnacle of where humanity, well, where God has brought down Jerusalem from heaven to earth, sure, but the pinnacle of what God has done in this world is a city. It's a place of great complexity, a place in which you can see where we're going to be able to flourish and grow forever and ever in his purposes with him. It's all part of the big picture of what God is doing here, that we flourish and change and grow. And that means that whatever our work is, whatever sector it might be in, just a few pictures on the screen there, whatever sector it might be in, we are all contributors. All of our work has purpose. Even if you might think that you are in the most dead-end job that there might be, it still has purpose because God created us to work. And in fact, that's true of whatever we do and for however long we do it. It's part of who we are as people to serve this world and to serve God by simply working wherever God has put us. Now, a little bit about faith in the workplace. Here's what Colossians 3 says. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. It's one of the key verses about how we are to view our work and our workplaces. It changes our perspective on the work that we do. This was all in relation to discussions about how the gospel changes, well, he's talking to the Colossian church there, how it changes the church, how we're all equal, and how in which we can work in terms of the relationships we have for the betterment of one another. And so in Colossians, there were servants who were present in the church, and they were asking the question, well, how do we relate to our human masters? How do we relate to masters who don't treat us perhaps so well? How do we do this thing now that we are believers, Christians? How do we work for God? And Paul writes and says, well, think of it like this. Whatever you do, do it as though you're doing it for the Lord. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's morally okay, do it as though you were working for the Lord. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, do it for God. It's how the gospel changes our approach, not just to our lives and our salvation, but in everything that we do. It does change us. It sets us on this different path of thinking about life and purpose and meaning that gives everything we do real purpose and value. As I said, that relates to whether we are stuck in a dead-end job that we don't like particularly, or it's whether we're a high flyer somewhere doing a job that we really, really love. It goes both ways. The gospel changes the way we think about what we do. And I guess I was thinking about all sorts of things, because faith in God changes all different aspects of the way we do our work. It gives us a moral compass to our work as a starting place. We get this inner-built, almost like a GPS system about what's right and what's wrong. And what we know is that if we are trying to do what God would want us to do, act in ways that are morally right in our workplaces, try and make the decisions the best we can for God and the way that he would have us do things, then we are going to be doing everyone a favor because we know that God's ways work. Despite what the world might say, despite what a boss might want us to do, despite some dubious decision that someone might want to make, us pursuing God's ways does everyone a favor because we know serving God and doing things his ways leads to flourishing. It gives us a moral compass about what we do. And we ask the question, what is moral and what is right to redress the balance in our world? It gives us a real spiritual strength to our work as well, an inner power that gives us strength at work to make some of the tough decisions that we've got to make, to stand for what we believe in, maybe. But not only those kinds of decisions that we have to make, also it helps us to not get so wound up about issues such as what success looks like, what failure looks like, what boredom looks like. You know, it helps us think about what success really does look like. Our world would say that success is all about position. I don't know, getting a new office, getting a bigger salary, getting better grades at school, whatever it might be. And none of those are bad things. I remember when I was at Moorlands, I remember the principal, Steve Brady, saying about how he knew people who worked in such a way that they were in high-flying positions, but actually they used that so that they could then give their money away to Christian organizations and charities and people who were then going off and doing other spheres of work that were more directly involved with people. So none of that is wrong in and of itself, but success to God is simply being faithful in what we do. Keeping on, keeping on, bearing fruit through every good deed that we do. That's the way God views success. Same about failure, really. You know, we can sometimes get so wound up about the grades that we get at school, or whether or not we did get that promotion at work or not. And if we didn't, it can be so difficult for us. God helps us think through those issues because he gets us thinking about how in Jesus, actually, our identities are not bound up in whether we've got a promotion, in whether we've got that bigger salary. You know, it might help family, it might help us flourish in other ways in life, I suppose, to have a bigger salary or to gain the promotion, but our identity is not bound up in those things. Our identity is in Jesus, serving him, looking to him in everything that we do, and seeing that we do everything for his glory and purpose. It gives us a new concept of work itself. I said earlier, it's all about the flourishing that we can have. It's the means by which God cares for and loves his world. He works through all the different spheres of work in order to help that happen. You know, from the farm laborer who milks the cows, right the way through to the CEO who manages the company who distributes it. Right the way through to those in healthcare who look after people, right the way through to the people who just do what they do in order so that other people can grow and develop and so that we can function as people more effectively. And all our workplaces help in that in some way. Linked to that is a new perspective on work itself. There's a new way of approaching it. We think of this common good that we work towards as a society. We work towards helping one another through whatever it is that we do. Looking out for other people, serving them. And then it gives us a sense of a new mission field to work in as well. And I mean mission in the biggest sense. I don't mean just simply that we're in our workplaces so that we can share our faith. Sometimes our mission field and doing mission for God takes on a much broader perspective than that. Sure, we should be about trying to share our faith where we can, trying to share it with our colleagues and friends and those around us. But there is something about the mission of God which says simply doing your work well features in his mission. I mean, take, for example, an airline pilot. What do you want an airline pilot to do? Well, of course, we could say, well, it's great, airline pilots could witness to their colleagues and things. But actually, what's the most important thing that an airline pilot's got to do? He's got to fly a plane, hasn't he? He's got to fly a plane, and that's what he's there for. And that's the benefit that he brings to other people. And I'm sure when we think about all of our different jobs that we do, we can see that somewhere and in some way, that what we do has a purpose and a mission for God simply in doing what we do well. And there is real purpose to that among God's purposes as well. And I guess that means that in whatever myriad of decisions we've got to make, myriad of spheres we might work in, we get a verse like this, Proverbs 16, verse 3, that we should be a people who commits to the Lord whatever we do, because we know that he will establish our plans. The hard thing about our workplaces is that when work gets difficult and tough, we can't always see the way forwards. Sometimes we get to the point of feeling quite burnt out about the work we do, or we lack seeing the purpose of it and the reason why we're in the place that we are. Well, God says to us, commit to him whatever we do, and he will establish your plans. It's a promise he makes to us. If we're people who are seeking him, trying our best to serve him, serve others, and do well in our jobs, and if we're seeking him in all we do, committing to him the work that we're involved with, he's going to guide us. He's going to lead us. He's going to show us the way forward and show us and give us a sense of his hand upon our lives, that we are doing something productive for him that brings glory to him as we serve in all the different spheres that we do. Now, we'll come back with a few things in just a few moments, but at this point, I'm going to invite Boff to come and join me up the front. I'm sorry that I pointed out Boff this morning. I did. I made a point about IKEA this morning, didn't I? And you felt all right about that. You've told me that, so that's all well and good. But, Boff, you obviously work.
I do.
It's a good start, isn't it? Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself before we get going, and then we'll talk more specifically about the areas you're involved with? Are you on?
Yeah, I think I'm on. No entry music, by the way, which I'm disappointed about.
We could have got, like, working 9 to 5 or something.
That would be nice.
I would have laughed.
Not camp enough, but anyway. yeah, so James, as I'm actually known in my professional working environment.
We forget this, don't we?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So I have, I guess I've been in the workplace full-time for 20-odd years now, and almost all of that has been in retail. Pretty much all of that in this area here. And I don't really know how I ended up working in retail, actually, except for the fact that I went to university to do an English degree. And Thomas, don't listen to what I say as being an example to everybody here, but really an English degree qualifies you for everything a little bit, but nothing nothing very uniquely. So I've been working in retail, and I think probably I enjoy being with people. I enjoy working with teams of people. I'm not a specialist who likes working in isolation. I like the fellowship and the company and the togetherness of being a part of a team. Today, the role that I do is very much supported by the fact that I get to be around people all the time. I don't know what else you want to know about me that you don't know.
What is your role? Do you want to say a little bit about your role?
So I'm an HR manager for IKEA, and for those who think that maybe you're not sure what that means, maybe in generations gone by it would have been known as personnel. And most recently it's been known as HR, and now our industry is evolving to be known as people and culture, which is a very fluffy title, but really I suppose what that indicates is the evolution of what people in my position do, where formerly it was about contracts and hiring and firing and making sure people had uniform and making sure they got paid on time and the right amount. And then it has evolved really to the situation today where I suppose to pick up on some of the things that you've already shared up there, the workplace is a demanding and often quite stressful environment where a lot of people spend a substantial amount of their lives, and we help people to develop competence, to feel like they can build for a career. So a lot of what I do is about talent spotting, succession planning. I work for a company who are very proud of the culture and the values that are part of what we do. And anecdotally, my job title is described as the custodian of our values and the conscience of the store as well. So I spend a lot of time caring for people and looking after people and basically knowing people. So there are 400 people who work in an average-sized IKEA store. We have 22 stores in the UK, 394 across the world.
And one coming to a town near you.
Well, yeah. 400 individuals requiring 400 different and individual ways of looking after them, I suppose. So the team who work with me and I, we're really there to support and look after them. Then I suppose the other part of my job is within the steering group of the store. So because each IKEA store is such a large operation relative to most retail units, we have a lot of autonomy and a lot of flexibility in how we run. So the store manager in every unit really has a team of 7 or 8 people, but the two crucial people who report into him, one is the HR manager and the other is the money person. I would very much describe myself as the lightness to the dark of the money person. I can't see Paul's face to know how that makes an accountant feel. But so we steer the store, we navigate it. So my job is a blend of operational and strategic. There's a lot of process and there's a lot of people. I suppose if you think of that as a grid with 4 parts, then I tend to flip between those things.
And how would you see your role as a Christian in the workplace? How important is that environment to you as a Christian?
I have some notes. So this is a subject which I think is increasingly I have a passion or an energy for this now more than I ever did before. And it's always good to have a few quotes from people who are much wiser than you. So missionary thinker Leslie Newbegin.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So the primary action of the church in the world is the action of its members in their daily work. That's something that he said at some point. I don't know when, because I'm not really sure what era he lived in. St. John of the Cross, I'm assuming he was quite a long time ago, probably didn't have IKEA when he was around, but mission field is to bring love to people where there is no love. The Lausanne Conference in 2010, came up with this vision for mission in the workplace, and I think it was something along the lines of 98% of people are neither envisioned nor equipped for what they do in 95% of their working lives. And you know, as a community chapel, as a church with the resources and the gifts and the opportunity to do so much in our local community, of course I'm supportive and hugely passionate about that. But actually, if I think about it from a different perspective, what I'm able to do here is really quite a small portion of my time, and actually a much bigger portion of my time is spent in the workplace. So I suppose it's important for me to understand the responsibility I have, the role I play, or the impact that I have with quite a lot of people on a daily basis.
And we talked a bit about being a Christian in the workplace. How do you understand your role in a secular environment?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there are a number of different answers to this. One, I suppose, connects to being in a position of responsibility. I have this requirement of my role to be inclusive and to create an inclusive environment, which means that my belief or my faith, I don't promote that as being in any way how I think it should be. So I have to be welcoming, I have to be inclusive, I have to make sure that everybody feels able to be who they feel they are in the workplace. But then I suppose the more confident I get, the more mature maybe I become, which is not a word that many people would use to describe me. I've had this perspective for many years that the fruit of the Spirit, to be somebody who can demonstrate love, joy, peace, kindness, those things in my actions every day, that really is enough. That is sufficient, and that actually my role as a Christian in the workplace is quite a passive one. But the more I reflect on this, and the more engaged I come with the topic, the more I realise that isn't enough, and that actually I need to help people to connect the behaviours that hopefully they see in me with the motivation or the background behind why I want to behave in that way. And I'm doing a course at the moment, actually, and it's much more useful to have professional people put things into good words than maybe I would otherwise naturally do. But I carry this little card around in my pocket now, which it says, it's a little prayer which I suppose I try to say throughout the day at work. Father, help me to model godly character, make good work, minister grace and love, mould culture, be a mouthpiece for truth and justice, and a messenger for the gospel. To your glory may it be. And it is more than just having patience and love and kindness to people, but it is those things to start off with. And then looking at the range of ages and life situations in the room, I suppose for those of you who haven't entered the workplace yet, I think this is probably just as valid a point of view, really, actually. How we behave when we're under stress or when we're tested is one thing, but actually also then to be ready, to be prepared to be a messenger for the gospel when you sense that it's right, and to have my eyes open and my heart open to be wise for, okay, I can say something in this situation and it's okay.
And working hard, that factors in, I assume.
You had a slide up there about work-life balance, and I can't really see Becky's face from here, which is probably a wise thing. But look, it's always a dilemma, and of course, work is a means to an end in one very real sense, and maybe I think, yeah, I should just give to Caesar what it is, and then, you know, I'll keep an eye on the clock, and the second I can get home, my pipe and slippers will be ready, and I can enjoy the quality life that I have with my family. But I suppose I also have an evolving point of view on this as well, and you already shared a verse from Genesis about God putting man to work in the Garden of Eden. And then I do think that there is a connection between how committed and available and accessible I am in my work and how much of my time and my personality and my character I put on show to people and how effective I can be for the gospel in the workplace. So directness of contact, so I don't really want to be inaccessible to the people I work with. Continuity of contact, so a lot of what I do is about relationships and trust and people being vulnerable with me and knowing that I'm there for them. Commonality of purpose, so we share in things together as a team and I'm side by side with the people that I work with. This thing about multiplexity, so multiplexity being really that I can engage with people not just in the tasks that we share at work, but you know, I know about their family lives, they know about my family life. The richer the connections that I have and the broader the connections I have with people, the deeper the relationships. And I suppose those things require an investment in time and effort, which means that I don't really tend to watch the clock and I don't really always give as little as I think I can get away with at work, but I have a consciousness to do that for the benefit of the people that I work with and maybe for the benefit of my witness to those people when the time is right to do so. But of course, yeah, I mean, the world is full of stories. Some of those facts you put up there about ill health and stress and anxiety in the workplace, it is a very real concern that everybody has a responsibility to guard against, I'm sure.
And you've got, you obviously work with a lot of people and you see a lot of different situations. Are there, thinking about the wellness side of things, are there common trends that you see? Are there things that you tend to be aware of that go on amongst?
Yeah, so I think if you put this again to, I mean, the evolution of my role and maybe the evolution of what a modern employer, a good modern employer maybe is asked to do. So if you think about the subject of benefits of an employer, they used to be really your salary, do you get a good pension, and today I think actually we have certainly in the sector that I work in, we have a younger and younger workforce. We have a society which is changing in terms of welfare and provision for later on in life, and actually what people want out of an employer these days is quite different. So I spend a lot of time trying to understand what a modern, meaningful workplace does to provide for the people who work there. And it may not surprise you to know that we spend an awful lot of time and money where I work, and I'm sure we are no exception, on counselling services, on mental health awareness, on things like mindfulness, and even yoga, and all sorts of things which may make a superficial difference to people, but actually the state of mind, the state of health of a lot of people in the workforce today is really something to be concerned about. And I suppose there's a point that I would like to elaborate on, and I would tread really, really carefully with the words that I use here to be careful not to make any judgment and to be careful not to paint with a broad brush when there are very many different real circumstances. But the issue of mental health, the issue of anxiety and depression is one which really concerns me. And so there are 400 people in rough terms in an IKEA store, and I don't think the store I work in is any different to the norm, but we have 50 people beyond younger than 23, 24 in our store who I know have been diagnosed with anxiety or depression and are receiving medication or a great deal of help for that. And of course, it's a very, very sad situation, and this is where I'm going to try to use my words very carefully, because on the one hand, I think, well, this is an indication of culture and society, but on the other hand, I know it's not, because I know that we can be in loving, secure homes, families, Christian families even, and we can still find ourselves in difficult situations like that. And I think it's quite unusual for an employer to put so much care and emphasis, as is part of my role, central in my role, to love and support and to look after these people. And it's a growing trend. It's something which I don't really have the answer to, but I do know that as an employer, we have the opportunity to be compassionate and caring. And maybe I'm talking to some of you guys who haven't had an opportunity to put on a suit and tie and go out to work yet, but work can be quite hard, and work can be kind of quite relentless. And unless you're kind of fortunate when you enter the workplace in sort of roughly 20 years, it's where you'll be for probably the next, well, for you young guys, maybe 70 years.
That's depressing in itself, you know, isn't it?
So actually, there are peaks and troughs. There are challenges, and the robustness that I think is required to get over difficulties and to know that actually it's okay to fail, and it's okay to be given feedback about how to do things, and that actually, we as an employer, I don't know whether we are in loco parentis or whether I don't know what it is about the era we live in, but I certainly find that a lot more of my job is spent caring for and looking after people in that situation. And then, of course, yeah, you have the people at the other end of the structure in the store who do burn out, who are ambitious and career-driven and really don't have a good balance on things. And then there are people who are just going through really difficult times. And, you know, at the moment, I can kind of sit before you today having had 10 days where some of the things that I've been dealing with, some of the situations with people who are presently in a different continent to the ones where they've been brought up, and, you know, they're feeling very homesick and they want to go back there. People who are dealing with bereavement or the prospect of bereavement for close ones. It's an interesting sphere, and I'm really pleased that I work for an employer who recognises the value of looking after people. And of course, I would be unwise to say that my faith totally protects me from ever being subject to any of those things, far from it. But it is a comfort to me at the end of the day when I get in the car and I head for home that I know I can pray about these things, and I know that the weight of some of these things can be lifted off my shoulders, and I can pray for people, and I can pray that God will meet them in their situations, even if they don't know God themselves. I'm really pleased to be able to reflect and put it in that context.
And just finally, just in terms of the wellness side of things, are there things that you see or preventative measures, I suppose you could call them, things to be aware of in the workplace that really do stand out to you as key issues to do with work specifically in our health?
I'm not sure there are, but look, I do think we work, and again, I'm not suggesting that retail is any different to any other, but we work in quite a fast-paced, pressured environment, and I think, just taking time to be conscious of the people that you work with, what are the signs or the triggers in their behaviour or in their personal physical appearance or anything that you think has changed or is different. Of course, I'm fortunate enough to be able to see absence statistics and anything that might be a red flag. Actually, prevention is better than cure. So I think if I see something that I think is a concern, then I'm able in my job to get in front of those people and talk to them and try to tease out whatever it is that's going on. I feel like you might have had an answer that you were expecting from me for that question. Did you?
No, I was waiting on you.
Okay.
But it's true, isn't it? One key thing to get across about all of these different sessions is that A, there are all kinds of factors which feature in our health, whether it's to do with our mental health, physical health, and so on and so forth. B, that actually just the simple fact of talking with someone can make such a huge difference. Something we've really encouraged throughout all these sessions. If you're feeling a bit low or feeling that things are difficult, talk about it with someone. Don't bottle it up. Don't hold it in somewhere, because it won't, you know, it doesn't go so well if that happens. You need to be able to have someone that you can talk to about it. And it's great if you've got managers and other people at work that you can do that with, but just even a Christian friend or someone you can get alongside and say, look, I'm feeling this way. Can I talk about this with you for just a few moments? Is so vital in all of that.
Yeah, and look, this is probably not the forum for me or anybody else to necessarily cast judgment on this, but the fact is that we are a much broader range of people who make a much broader range of choices and identify with a much more broader range of things than maybe 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So I have co-workers at work who change the gender that they identify with on a weekly basis. I have people who really just don't know where they fit in society. And on the one hand, I suppose I could make a judgment about whether I think that's right or wrong. But actually, these people who are pushed to the margins need someone to show them love and acceptance and probably not judgment. And that often puts me outside of my comfort zone and asks of me to show an inclusion and an acceptance and a love for people who I struggle to really understand or interact with. But I don't know whether this is fair to say, but I think we're in a society where anything goes. And if anything goes in society, then it definitely is the case in the workplace. And retail is not really the sort of industry where, you know, you need to go away and study at university for 5 years and you come in very smart and prim and proper with a degree or anything like that. So I think because so many people, and so many young people in particular, find retail jobs to be very accessible, we get to meet our kind of culture on the front line as it is.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions? Any questions anyone's got?
That aren't about flat pack furniture and whether I can come and build your desk. We do three types of meatballs. The vegan-friendly vegetarian ones have the lowest carbon footprint of all three, but they taste horrible.
That's not manager's special. It's not on that board.
It is possible to reach a threshold on meatballs. I reached it about a year ago. I think actually that is probably the reality for most people that I work with. They have a sense of value from the title of the job that they have. That's maybe connected to the car that they have. That's maybe connected to the salary that they have. The number of people who report into them. I work for a company which does everything it possibly can to be non-hierarchical. So my store manager and I, who in theory have the two biggest responsibilities in the store, we wear the same super attractive yellow uniform as everybody else does, and we do everything we can to create an equal environment. But I've worked previously in finance for a very short amount of time and not particularly a glamorous part of finance either. And in every job I've ever had, there are definitely people who are chasing the prestige of the job that they have. So I suppose to answer your question, I don't really engage with those people to challenge them on the folly or the lack of wisdom or the choices they're made, unless they find themselves in a situation where really they are unhappy, or you know, this tends to come maybe with a failure in a job or failure to attain a promotion that they wanted. And then, do you know what, we can talk about what's really important. And actually, 9 times out of 10, maybe I don't have the closeness with that person to share a clear gospel message with them straight away. But you can help people, I think, to try to take comfort or find meaning or value in things other than just the company that they work for, the job that they have. And then as you build that relationship and you build the trust, then maybe it's the right time to talk a little bit more about why I don't feel the same way about my job or whatever. Thank you. And actually, you know, I didn't really want this to be too much about talking about my job, but actually I've been in a fairly challenging situation at the moment where, so you guys know that I work in Bristol. You know that Bristol is not just the other side of Damrum, it's a little bit further on. We all have a responsibility to try, and this work-life balance thing and kind of chasing the job or whatever, we have a responsibility to try to work out whether a job is the right thing for us to do, whether it's how much importance do I place on it. And sometimes these things are seasonal as well. So I kind of, you know, maybe it's right at that particular moment in time that you feel that what you're going to get from that job, it gives you a salary to allow you to use it for the church's benefit, or maybe you're going to gain a particular competence or a leadership skill for doing that job that you think you can put into better use in the future. But ultimately, the more you can step back from the sort of, I would say, the small hat and take a wider perspective, maybe the bigger picture is helpful as well.
Great. Anyone else? Any other questions? And there was quiet. No, thank you so much, Bob. Thank you for sharing those thoughts. Round of applause too. I'll just finish off with a few bits and pieces. We're almost out of time, but just to round things off in terms of thinking about what to do when work gets tough. Just this last slide, and just a few questions that we can ask ourselves. Things like simply asking the question of what is God's purpose in what I'm doing? How can I see what God is asking of me where I am? Is there something about that that's going to change my perspective about my workplace? You might think you're in a dead-end job somewhere, but is there something that God is speaking to you about where you are, about the place that he has put you for this particular period of time? When work gets tough, what about the rest of life as well? Are we coping generally in life with our health? You know, there can be all sorts of reasons why work can seem difficult, sometimes because it is the kind of work we're involved with and it gets very stressful in places. It puts a lot of demands on us. We can work too much and overwork at times. There's all kinds of things which go into it. Are we coping generally in that sense? But of course, work factors as just one part of our lives. We've got our family lives. We've got our church lives. We've got our all sorts of aspects of our lives that come together to build this big picture. How are we coping generally in life? What's our health looking like? Are we looking after ourselves? And are there things that we can do to help improve things in other areas so that work might seem a bit better than it is? What other factors could influence the way I'm feeling? We know that we all go through difficult periods of life. There are always strains and stresses and troubles that go on in our lives. Are there other factors that can influence the way that we're feeling about our work or about our life generally? Is there any way to ease the load? If it is a particularly demanding job where you're working so many hours that it is causing an awful lot of strain, is there some way to ease the load? I guess part of your role, Boff, is to talk with people when they're finding work too much and there's too much going on. And employers will tend to be open to talking about that kind of stuff because, you know, being a good employee, they'll want to retain, they'll want to keep people and have that conversation about, you know, workloads and what's possible and what's not. It's worth having that conversation. Is there any way to ease the load in what we do? And simply, is it time for a change? Sometimes it can be time for a change, and that's okay. Whether it's going back and learning something new, doing a new skill, changing jobs, changing roles to something slightly different, perhaps moving to a different company, whatever it might be time for a change when we go through difficult patches. But all of this is put in the big perspective of what does God ask of us? How does he ask us to work where we are for him? What purpose can we see? And even if we are struggling, we can cling on to verses like this, Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. That's God's promise to our lives. If we're following him, if we're seeking him in all things, he gives us future hope and a plan that will never fail. And so as we come to the close on this one, we're going to just pray together and ask him to help us understand that and take that to heart in the things that we do in our workplaces. Father God, we thank you that we can reflect upon your word in all of this. We know that work can at times be stressful, it can be difficult, there can be times of trouble within our workplaces. We also know we can find great joy and satisfaction in the things that we do, real purpose in what you ask us to do in any given time. But we pray tonight, Lord, that as we've thought about this together, you would really instill it in our hearts, the plan that you have for our lives, the real purpose that we have in serving you wherever we are. In whatever job you've called us to at this point in time, may we be a people that seek you in all things, that seek the good of those around us, for our colleagues, our friends, for those that we use the services that we provide. Lord, may we be a people who work for the good of others, and may, Lord, we be able to see your purpose and plans in that. Help us, Lord, to serve you well by serving our workplaces well and serving others in your name. Amen. Amen. Next week, we're looking at being mindful of materialism, and then we're finishing off the week after that with keeping well when stress levels rise. What do you do when the pressure's on? So those are the next 2 weeks coming up. Thanks for coming out tonight.